All right, it's 6 p.m., so I will call this evening's Planning Commission meeting to order. Can I have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Berlin?
Here.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Here.
Commissioner Roof?
Here.
Commissioner Sackerson?
Here.
And Vice Chair Maravilla?
Here. All right, I will lead everyone in the flag salute, if you could please stand.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. The agenda review is that, does anyone on the commission like to re-advise the order of the agenda items tonight? All right. We'll move on to community comments and suggestions. This is a public comment period that acts as an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, or suggestions on matters that are not scheduled on this agenda for the evening. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission, and members of the public may provide comment either in person or remotely by raising your hand to indicate that you'd like to provide comment. There's no one in the room, so do we have anyone in the Zoom room?
There is no public in attendance on Zoom.
Thank you. So with that, I will close the community comments and suggestions. And we'll move on to written communications. I didn't receive any correspondence, so was there any other written communications after the agenda was posted?
Not today.
Thank you. So that moves us along to the consent agenda, which includes the approval of the minutes of the February 7th, 2023 meeting. Do I have a motion?
I just didn't know procedurally. I see where the one item we heard, item 8A, it says passed. Do you normally put a score there about how it passed? I don't know if you do or not.
We don't typically just pass by a majority of the votes. If there's a desire from the commission to have that reflected more accurately, we can.
No, that's fine. I just was curious. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any comments or questions? All right. Can I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I will move to approve the minutes of the February 7th meeting.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Can I have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Sackerson?
Yes.
Commissioner Berlin?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Yes.
Commissioner Roof?
Yes.
And Vice Chair Maravilla?
Yes. We have no public hearing items for this evening, so we'll move on to non-public hearing items, which is the 2022 General Plan Annual Progress Report. I'm assuming there's a staff report. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Vice Chair. And good evening, members of the Planning Commission. I'm Andrew Perez, your planning manager. I'm here this evening to present the city's 2022 General Plan Annual Progress Report. So the California Government Code Section 65400 requires that each public agency prepare and file a General Plan Annual Report and submit that to the Office of Planning and Research each year prior to April 1st. In addition to the annual report, the status of each agency's housing element and its progress towards meeting its housing goals and the implementation of its goals and policies must be reported to HCD by that same date. The government code requires that the city council must review the report prior to its submittal to the state. However, locally, we've made it a tradition in presenting it to the Planning Commission because the commission is the primary hearing body for most of these entitlements that result in the development and housing projects in our city. So the annual report contains the status of all of the elements of the general plan. And locally, that means 8 separate elements, those being land use, circulation, housing, agriculture, conservation, and open space, noise, safety, economic development, and parks and recreation. And so the purpose of the annual report is really threefold. At the state level, it informs the state of land use and development trends throughout the state. Locally, it helps inform our decision makers regarding important issue areas and helps with resource allocation, both financial and with regards to personnel. And finally, it also informs the public of the city's progress towards meeting our community goals that are established and laid out in each general plan element. So the annual report is a kind of a high-level view of the work efforts undergone by the city during the calendar year. It's not meant to be a comprehensive list of all the work that's been performed. And the annual report is broken up into two separate sections. So the first section summarizes legal requirements, status of each adopted element, and the progress towards our regional housing needs allocation goals. Whereas the second section is looks at the summary of the development activity in the planning, building, and engineering division within the city. So looking at the updates to the general plan elements, no updates were made to any of the individual elements in 2022. However, staff did initiate a comprehensive update of the general plan beginning on July 26th, 2022, in which staff had a scoping meeting with City Council to establish kind of the scope of work that's going to be undertaken in the general plan update. At the end of that hearing with City Council, directed staff to prepare and release a request for proposals, which occurred on November 4th. Applications and proposals were due back to the city by December 22nd. During that time, we just received one single proposal for services, and on February 14th, last Tuesday, staff brought that proposal in front of City Council to discuss the consultant's qualifications, further clarify the scope and budget of the general plan update, and kind of a general discussion about funding sources, scope of work, timelines, and stuff of that nature with regards to the plan update. That meeting concluded with staff receiving direction to negotiate a contract for services with Mentor Harnish, who was the consultant that submitted the loan application. So also included in section one of the report is housing data from 2022. There's a table that compares data for entitled, permitted, and completed units for the past 2 years, and also a table showing the city's progress towards meeting its RENA goals. So here I did want to point out that table two in the report, there is an error. That third column, there's a basic math error. So there's actually been 105 units permitted so far. I just wanted to point that out for the commission and the public. So moving on to section two of the report, this looks at the major work efforts of each of the divisions within the Community Development Department. The Planning Division carried out a number of ordinance updates, including updated ADU ordinance, adoption of ordinances to establish regulations for tiny homes on wheels, parklets, the implementation of SB 9, and also a update of the city's short-term rental ordinance. Staff worked with the consultant and our partner cities to finalize the pre-designed ADU plans and continue their participation in the Regional Housing Action Team Working Group. The Building Division took in a number of applications, plan reviews, issued several permits, conducted inspections to keep development rolling throughout the city. And finally, this section reflects the number of stormwater grading and encroachment permits issued by our engineering division. So that wraps up the summary of the report. So tonight, no actions required, but it is recommended that the Planning Commission receive and file the 2022 annual report for final acceptance by City Council and submittal to the state. Happy to answer any questions, should there be any.
Thank you. Do my fellow commissioners have any questions for staff? We'll start right here.
I do. I just have some clarification and understanding questions. To be clear, I don't see any reason why not to file the report as submitted. But just to help me understand a little bit with these, the updated housing element being the only element that's been updated this year, and everything else seems to be addressed moving forward as we update the general plan. That's my understanding. As that's the sole element currently up to date, my focus is clearly going to be on that for now. Can you go back to that table that you said there was a discrepancy and help me understand? Okay, so that 105, that's just the math there. So that includes 2020, 2021, and 2022, not just the last 2 years.
That's correct.
Okay. And there was a table right above that, table one. I want to say it was on page 18 or 16, right above that table. 16 to 38, I believe. Okay. What was concerning to me there was if you look at that line where it says very low income level, it seems like just across the board we have nothing to show. And as commissioner, that's very deeply concerning to me. And I'm wondering if you can help me to understand the efforts going forward and what's been done to try to address that number that will need to be met.
Yeah, so as you pointed out, I guess historically, the city, we've struggled to meet this very low-income housing goal. I think the primary tool that we have as a city and a department is the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. So this fund, we acquire funding through when projects are entitled. Developers have the option to dedicate certain number of units to affordable income categories, so low income or moderate income or very low, they so choose. If they would rather not dedicate those units, they can pay them in lieu fee, which is equal to 5% of the construction valuation.
That was one of my questions, was what is that in lieu fee?
Yeah.
That's okay.
And so that those monies that accumulate. And, for example, with the Haslow project that was entitled on Oak Park, the city will be assisting them with some funding to help build that project. So a developer, a private property owner can come to the city saying, hey, I want to develop very low-income units. How can this be a partnership? They could engage in discussions with the city and potentially obtain some of those funds to help build those units.
And is there a place that we can access, like, information on what kind of funds are truly available? Is that something that, like, a developer or a public, someone looking to build on, say, a parcel they've got, is that information that they can access on the city website or by contacting the development department?
Yeah, right now, contacting planning staff is really the only way that that information is obtainable. Staff did make a kind of a pledge to council that we will return with a yearly update to keep the council updated on the balance of that fund and any allocations that have been made, any future allocations that are anticipated. And that would be another way of communicating that resource.
Because okay. It's looking bleak. I mean, if our RENA number for that category alone is 170, if I'm reading that right, for the sixth cycle, like, and we're at zero, that's concerning, right? My follow-up question, and this is for me to understand what even fits this very low income. So I guess I'm going to ask you to tell me if I'm right or wrong in how I understand this, but I had to dig around a little bit, and my understanding is it's up to 50% of the average or the median income for our area. The only number I was able to come up with by Googling around was that the median income for this city is about $90,000 per household. Is that roughly the number that we're working with? So then we're addressing for this very low income bracket households that are bringing in less than $45,000 a year. Is that correct?
Yes, that's roughly correct.
Okay.
You are correct that very low income households make between 0 and 50% of the area median income.
Okay.
What that AMI is exactly for our county and our area, I would say it's about 90. Yeah.
Okay. So my follow-up, and the reason I'm saying this is because as a typical citizen, these are not things that I think about on a daily basis. These are not the black and white issues that typically come up when you're someone who's on Nextdoor or Facebook seeing the things that the city needs to address, which, by the way, thank you to staff for putting out that survey that's been circulating. I really actually very much appreciate that. I don't know if you guys have seen that. That outreach is important. But so many people are saying that they're overwhelmingly concerned with addressing the need to address the unhoused, the people experiencing homelessness. And my concern is that if we're not more proactive with our land use and our permitting and all the processes that we're responsible for making sure happens, that 0 to 50% income, people who are currently housed, that's our entire service sector. That's all the people that are working at Walmart, all our servers, our chefs, our cooks. Like, these are the people that we rely on to keep the city going. And if they're 1 to 2 paychecks away from being homeless, and we could have addressed providing housing ahead of time, that's where we're going to fail them. So my goal is constantly going to be to ask, like, how can we facilitate fixing this problem? So yeah, that was just my thoughts. Thank you for helping me to understand that some of this is in the works.
And I do think that in some way, you know, the planning department, building and engineering are limited in what we can do sort of on the private sector side. I think our ability is built into the regulations and incentivizing this type of housing as much as possible. Given that, we did get, as Andrew mentioned, we got direction from the council to move ahead with the comprehensive general plan update, which also included, they also included in that a development code update. And so we're going to be looking directly at the policies. Our housing element is done, but as part of that effort, the consultant will be looking at a consistency evaluation between our housing element and our other land use elements, circulation of all the other elements of the code. Of the general plan. And then as part of that, we're going to piggyback on top of that to develop the code update. That's going to take a few years, so we're just going to be looking for opportunities as we go along because the housing element is 2020 to 2028. So, the general plan update is going to take a significant chunk of that time. We'll be kind of looking at all avenues to try and get some of those very low-income units.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Ryan.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Bruff, do you have any questions or comments?
Yes, thank you. And thanks for welcoming me last week. I'm happy to be here tonight. I thank you for the report. And I also share the concerns that that Commissioner Saxon mentioned. And it's also not just the very low. It kind of goes across the board. But I was wondering if you might be able to, I did look through Table D, so I saw like kind of the strategies that the city's currently using. Some of them say, not yet implemented. And I understand as part of this new general plan, we'll be looking at what hasn't been done yet, what needs to be done. But I was wondering if maybe you could comment on what you thought maybe could have gone differently over the last couple of years so we weren't in this situation now. I know we had COVID. But I was wondering if you could maybe comment on what you think some of the shortfalls were that didn't allow us to get some of these goals met that were reflected in the RHNA column.
Yeah, it is kind of difficult. I think COVID and the pandemic definitely had an impact. There was, you know, from an economic downturn, we saw, well, we saw like individual remodels and home improvement projects skyrocket, larger development projects really slowed down. We didn't see a lot of those being submitted. You know, fortunately, during that time, we had the Haslow project come in. That's going to bring 62 units online of affordable units. We've had discussions with, you know, with pretty much every discussion planning staff has with a property owner or someone looking at a particular site, and they ask, what does the city want? The answer is always affordable housing, please. And then we kind of offered, you know, point to certain housing element policies to try to encourage them to go down that road, because we have to support every project with our existing policies. So if you can check on these boxes, that's going to really reduce some of the uncertainty in the discretionary and entitlement process. So we're always trying to encourage them. We have that affordable housing trust fund that can supplement private development money. So we're really at the mercy of, you know, the market too. And, you know, developers try to make a profit, and that's kind of, that's the name of the game. So trying to balance affordable units with still being able to make the profit that they desire is a tough juggling act, but that's, we strive to do it with every project.
And with those 62 units you mentioned, that's really exciting. What will those be in the low, or where do those fit in terms of this income level
situation? So it's probably 63. It's the low units that were entitled in 2021.
Oh, I see. Sorry, entitled there. Okay. And then El Camino.
El Camino Real.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that project, they've submitted their first submittal of construction plans to obtain a building permit, hoping to get that issued sometime this year.
And then I also wanted to comment, I'm super excited about those ADU plans. I went online and reviewed all of them, and I'm like, wow, this is really, I think that's a really exciting thing for our city, that people who have land that they can use can access those. And I saw there was some part of the plan, one of the Table D elements was that if there was a deed restriction on making that a low-income unit, that there would be some negotiation fees, but maybe that hadn't come through yet. Do you know where the status is on that?
Yeah, so with the update of the ADU ordinance, council also adopted the resolution to create a policy where building permit fees will be waived if in exchange for a deed restriction on an ADU to keep it available for low-income households. So that's another tool that's available for a community. And, you know, it's still probably a few months or maybe a year out, but the county and SLOCOG are undertaking an affordable by design market study. So we're hoping that comes back and says, you know, almost across the board units of a certain size would qualify as low-income units. And then we can direct people in that direction.
Because I do have a little bit of concern that people are going to, you know, charge a lot for these ADUs. Like, I just anecdotally, like, my neighbor has one. It's 500 square feet. He's charging $2,200 a month for that unit. So on paper, we can say, well, we built these ADUs, but in practice, are they actually affordable? I having some parameters on that, I think, would be really helpful. And for the deed restriction, is that for the life of the unit, or is it, like, time-dependent, or how does that work?
It's for a 10-year time period.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Commissioner Berlin, do you have any questions or comments?
I do. Thank you. Thanks, Andrew, for the good staff report. Couple questions. You know me. And again, I apologize. I would have tried to reach you, but yesterday was a holiday. And so, anyways, some of these are, I'm sure you can answer right away. So, and some of my fellow commissioners already asked and answered some really good questions that I had. So thank you, commissioners. Let's just go right to the last page of your staff report. Just so I understand, and I don't know if this is an actual, you know, template for what you're going to submit, but the question is, pertaining to the ADUs, there's 9 that were permitted. yet 13 of them are completed. Can you explain that discrepancy? I'm sorry, page 38 of your staff report. The very last page that we have. And again, I'm looking at the permitted versus completed ADUs.
Okay, yeah. So these numbers are looking at the number of permits that were issued for an ADU. That'd be the second column, the permitted column, whereas completed are the number of units that were completed and finished in 2022. So some of those units could have been applied for and issued a permit in 2021 and then were occupied for the first time in 2022.
Okay. Yeah, I figured it was something fairly routine. I just didn't get that. And then on the bottom, the housing application summary, you have total housing applications, 5. Number of units proposed, all received 18, but the bottom two summaries, approved and disapproved housing units, is 0. So I don't know, I would have assumed that of the 5 housing applications submitted, some of them got approved. And that's wrong.
Yeah, that's a good question. So all the worksheets provided in the appendix come from a spreadsheet that was provided to the city and mandate that we use from the Department of Housing and Community Development. So everything on this summary page auto-populates. So that's a really good question. Why?
Yeah, again, I'm not trying to trick, just I didn't know where those numbers come from, and I figured it was tied to something, but maybe look into that one before it goes to City Council. That's all. I didn't know where those numbers were tied to, but I'm sure, like you said, they auto-populate on the spreadsheet, so I'm sure there's an explanation for it. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's a good catch. Thank you.
I caught that one. One of the questions I had, too, was a big picture. And I see in that your eyes, man, I don't know how your eyes deal with those table D in particular. But, you know, it says program. And then one of the column headings is time frames in the housing element column, with dates that are either fast approaching or some seem even maybe past due or some couple of years off. Who sets those time frames?
So those are all established with the housing element update. Some time frames that are kind of a hard end date are state mandated, whereas others are, you know, developed by staff based on what we anticipate the workload being and what's a reasonable time frame of completing those tasks.
Okay. So
it varies.
So in some cases, it could be tied to our housing element that we submitted in our general plan, or in some cases, it could be mandated from the state. But there is room to massage those as we go through this. Year to year, I know you do this annual report every year. You know, and if we're not hitting some of those targets, maybe we need to push out the target date a little bit.
Correct, yeah.
Or on the other hand, maybe because we're not hitting our right at a low income, maybe we got to put an emphasis to move some of those up and, you know, put some resources toward. I'm just wondering that flexibility.
Yeah, every year it's a kind of a great opportunity for staff to look at our work program, kind of project for the year ahead and say, okay, kind of compare where we're at, where we need to be, and are any of these programs going to get us there? And let's elevate them and make them a priority in 2023.
Great. That's awesome. Something just for Brian and crew to look forward to, you know, put those in some kind of a fashion that's going to work for you. There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot there in those tables. See, I had a couple more. I don't think I put them all in here. Well, okay, I guess I'll get some of the status of the program implementation column, the table D again, the far right column, that a number of them have no progress or nothing was begun. A number of them have really good progress being made. So my question is on some of those answers, and again, I don't want to get into the weeds of your report, but I think we've done some work in some cases, like for example, page 29 on your staff report, table D, part two, the amnesty for ADU compliance. I know for a fact that the city and planning department has proactively helped people that are, you know, coming in with a grandfathered ADU to try to come into compliance. And, you know, it's a formality, but I think the column heading in the report says, you know, no progress. And I think that's not accurate. I think the city is doing stuff and should get credit for doing stuff from a state level and continue to, you know, offer some kind of amnesty for people that need to do conversions. So that's just feedback. Again, I'm not expecting a response from you. I'm just trying to give you a constructive, and it's not criticism. It's like, let's make this report work for an accurate representation of what efforts we are doing. That's all.
Yeah, so you're correct. That yeah. Staff is, you know, we try to facilitate legalizing unpermitted dwelling units, generally they're ADUs. You know, this program in particular looks to establish a formal program that's codified or adopted by policy. So that's why the no progress comment was made, but could go into a little more detail and say staff does make every effort to
maybe they're really only looking at the actual numbers and our verbiage on those things that doesn't really matter. I don't know, but I just figured we might as well give yourself some credit when you're actually doing some work for it. Let me back up a little bit, 10,000 foot of it. What happens now? These RINA, these housing requirements that are forced down from the state and distributed statewide, so everybody has to accommodate growth in some fashion. And I'm just wondering, what happens if we don't hit these RINA numbers after 8 years? What are the repercussions of that? And number two is how, I don't know, and I think maybe Commissioner Sagerson might have sent me a link to a website where there was more information about how they categorize, how does the state know how Arroyo Grande can grow? How do they know that we can accommodate 170 very low-income housing? So, two-part question. What happens if we push back What happens if we don't hit the RINA numbers, number one? And then number two is, how are those numbers generated from California Department of Housing to put them in those various categories to begin with?
So I'll answer the second part of your question first. The state goes through a constant cycle of looking at population projections over a period of time, and then they assign geographical areas a number. So for the Central Coast in our region, SLOCOG is really the entity that develops the individual RINA allocations for each jurisdiction. Each city and county has a seat at the table during those deliberations. And then when our number was 692 units for the sixth cycle. And then other formulas and projections assign those to the four different income categories based on a number of factors. And really the purpose of the housing element is to show that you can accommodate the 692 units of the various income levels. So the city needs to be able to plan for those units, but there's not an obligation to ensure that they're all built, really. We just need to show that they can be, because the city's obviously not a developer, but we need to do our best as a city to facilitate the development and meet the criteria or meet the quantity of each of these four affordability levels.
Okay, so thank you. That's helpful. So as long as the city is planning and capable, you know, resource-wise to accommodate those houses, they don't necessarily have to be built. I mean, maybe that's the goal and objective, but they don't necessarily have to be built by the end of that 8-year period.
That's correct. And at the end of, the housing element process, it does get sent to the state to certify that it's compliant with state law. So we are obligated to abide by all the policies and programs that we say we're going to implement and evaluate our projects by. So if we skew from that, then there could be repercussions. But if we are operating by our municipal code and by our housing element, we should be in good shape.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. For the general public and my commissioners, every year you file these annual reports, and they are up on, available to the general public to look at. And I opened 2020 just to see what 2020's numbers were, because it's helpful to know. And again, the trend, and again, maybe COVID, maybe economy, but we're, you know, our numbers are just not there. And again, how much control does the city have over private market, you know, economy issues? It's bigger than us, obviously. But the trend is like, wow, they give us a pretty big number. I tend to be an optimist. we got a lot of ground to make up, you know, if that's really our objective to actually have them finished. So a sense of comfort knowing that we still are doing this planning and resource allocation, but whether the houses are there after 8 years, I'm not sure. I mean, okay. Sorry, I'm not quite done. I do have one more question somewhere, if I can find it. And I apologize. I'm a little rusty, but I think I'll leave it alone. And if I end up coming, I come back. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Buchanan.
Yeah, I have a few questions. Thanks for the report and the analysis. Just want to clarify, you know, one thing, starting with Table 2 on our arena of progress so far. I just want to clarify staff's understanding of, our mid-cycle point for the sixth cycle will be coming up, I believe, next year. Can you clarify exactly when that mid-cycle point is, where we expect to be with these permitted numbers? I know, you know, these things aren't necessarily linear, but we're definitely not on pace to meet that prorated 50% number by the mid-cycle. Could you clarify that mid-cycle point, where we expect to be at mid-cycle, and then any consequences you think there may be for not meeting those goals at mid-cycle?
Yeah, of course. So in general, there's not a look back that we undergo to make sure we're on track, per se. There are specific programs that require a look back. For example, the ADU. There's an ADU program. Kind of look it up real quick. That says that the city will monitor its progress, and if we're not on pace to, permit the number of ADUs that are anticipated, then there's certain actions that can be taken or should be taken to further incentivize ADU creation. So, on the whole, there's not any comprehensive action that the city will undertake, but program by program, there may be look back clauses or provisions.
Sure. So again, on the second point there, do you expect this to about continue linearly? Are there any projects in the pipeline being discussed that you think might deviate from some linear progress here that won't meet those goals mid-cycle?
I anticipate probably a linear trend. We're not in a position where we have, as a city, a lot of big pieces of real estate that would result in significant number of units that are going to make a real dent in our arena goals. So really it's infill development, perhaps redevelopment of underutilized sites, and having those discussions with interested parties and seeing what the city can do to incentivize those and help meet our goals.
Yeah, the push has been, especially with ADUs, we are having the pre-designed ADU plans coming online as we speak. And hopefully that could kind of put in a little hyperbolic curve in that instead of the linear movement. There's other things that we've sort of just tried to get at that. The SB9 potentially, so far, we haven't seen much movement with that, but that is sort of a loosening of the regulations. Tiny homes on wheels, again, something that, just trying to work with those regulations that we have
and trying to loosen them for some different types of units. We don't know if, you know, the trends countywide have not been too positive for tiny homes on wheels to this point, but those are some of the actions that hopefully can kind of shake loose some additional development.
Okay, so, yeah, so you mentioned the city can look back. Are you aware of any consequences that, you know, the mid-cycle review process under SB 35 might provide here at the state level?
You know, I'm not aware of them, but I just kind of add on to my previous statement. So we do have the unique situation here where we are undertaking this comprehensive general plan update. So we'll be looking at objective design standards, perhaps by right housing entitlements, certain streamlining of the development process for residential projects. So while we're still a few years out on those, there still might be an opportunity at the back end of the update to really make a dent and make progress towards our housing goals.
Okay. I'm trying to get a sense of how aware, and if my understanding is incorrect, but I believe SB 35, the Housing Accountability Act, calls for a mid-cycle review of renal progress, and if that isn't met mid-cycle, then the city will be subject to streamlined ministerial approval for projects with certain percentages of affordable units. Am I wrong in my understanding there? Sounds like maybe this hasn't been circulating.
You know, that's something we're not something we've concerned ourselves with yet. We'll confer with the city attorneys and Brian and myself will definitely look into it and ensure that, you know, we don't find ourselves at the mercy of more state mandates. Try to keep that local control while still meeting our goals.
Sure. Okay. So, from my understanding, we would be subject to that based on the current progress, and that would be fall at the mid-cycle, which, again, I haven't been corrected, so I'm assuming my understanding is correct that mid-cycle would be next year sometime. I don't know the specific date, but it would be next year. And we, under SB 35 streamlining, looks like we would be subject to ministerial approval for certain projects. So then I had another question around... So goal 812.1 mentions an inventory of opportunity sites. I haven't actually seen this list. I don't know how much it gets updated. I do know that back in October, 400 West Branch was declared surplus by the city, which is, from my outside view, a potential opportunity site. Has that been offered? Has that been added to the list? And I know there's a process involved with that site being declared surplus. Has there been any update on that process?
For the surplus of that property, the city did go through the requirements of the Surplus Land Act. We received a couple of letters that we are following up with on groups that potentially would use that as affordable housing, but that's a process that we're going through at this point. So,
okay, thanks. And then, yeah, revisiting goal A3, 1, and 2. You know, anything related to code changes, standards, permitting. We've talked a few times here already about, you know, true, the private sector does build housing. That is the world we live in. If we're going to meet low and very low numbers for arena goals, that's typically subsidized housing. And we have spelled out in those goals code changes, standards, and changes to standards and permitting that can make that more feasible for builders, both, you know, at that moderate range that may not be subsidized at all, and the lower income ranges that may be subsidized. And so I think we may be, you know, underplaying how much those code changes can affect things here. Just a couple of recent anecdotes that I think are really interesting. There was some recent discussion of zoning changes in Pismo with a comment by a longtime landowner there who mentioned that they wanted to build homes and on their land in Pismo for a while, close to downtown. They've asked the city for zoning changes to make it more feasible financially for them to build at the density that would make it feasible. And the city hasn't granted it to that, but they would love to build if those changes ever go into place. And that was public, just a public comment submitted on one of these items that I happen to see. We also have, you know, Grover with some code updates that have seen a handful of projects come through just by making some of those code updates. So there are definitely things we can do to incentivize. You know, we don't build the homes. We definitely prescribe what can't be built, though. But I noticed Skoll 8131, 832, there may be others that I missed related to code changes, standards, and permitting that explicitly have mention of no progress being made. Could you maybe just discuss a little bit about what the limiting factor there is, where we haven't made any progress? Is it about time? Is it about deferring some of those things to be rolled in with the general plan update? What's going on there?
Yeah, so I think you kind of nailed it. It's a limited staff resources. Our work plan in the past year was focused on several ordinance updates, and I think the thinking being, this is something that is perfect for within the scope of, fits within the scope of the general plan update. There are a number of, like I said, programs that call for increasing the density in certain mixed use zones, relaxing sign standards, and all things that are within the scope of the general plan update. So, you're right, they probably would incentivize and probably see some more redevelopment, especially along our mixed use corridor, if we were able to get these ordinance updates passed. Right now, it's just been the limiting factor is really staff resources.
Okay, great. Thanks. That seems like a safe assumption that things related to that might end up being a good candidate for things being rolled into the general plan update. All right, great. Thanks for answering my questions. I don't have anything else to add.
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions, and it's really actually more in terms of the general plan update, now that we've discussed it a little bit. Thank you guys for putting this all together, too. It's always great to see how we're moving along and how we're not moving along in some ways, but we're at least trying to. Do we have an estimate as to, like, I know you mentioned that the city council just approved, at the Valentine's Day meeting, some things with the general plan. Do you have, like, a timing estimate of, like, what that looks like right now for the updates?
So there were sort of two options, I guess. One was a 2-year scope and one was a 3-year scope. And the city council did direct staff to go 3-year scope, which allowed a kind of expanded scope of work. There are a lot of things with public outreach and some additional kind of committees and things like that could be included in that 3-year work scope. And that would be for the general plan. There are some additional items that will go beyond that 3-year scope, like the climate action plan can get going during that 3-year time frame, but that's going to take a little longer as well. So there's pieces of it that will go beyond that, but really it's the 3-year scope. So that would start soon.
That was my next question. Did they get as far as the timeline, or do we just kind of have a general idea of the timeline?
Well, they directed us to go back for a contract.
Okay.
So I think once that contract comes back to the council, then we have a kickoff meeting with the consultant pretty soon thereafter, and we'll work with them to refine the scope and get a schedule down. But our intention is to keep with that 3-year scope from the time essentially we get the contract going.
Could that be something that you showing us the timeline within planning commission of some, at some meeting or something, so we could know what that actually looks like?
Certainly. Yeah. And we can even, we could forward you what was in the proposal, which is a general kind of timeline that would begin once it starts. We'll have a much more, hopefully, refined timeline once we work with the consultant.
That'd be great. Thank you. And you said as part of the general plan update, there is going to be the development code will also be updated. I'm assuming that also has to do with zoning and everything, all the building standards, everything like that. Is that something that the Planning Commission is going to look at during that date, like as we did with the housing element or any of the other elements? Do we have a say or a chance to give our opinion on anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. All of those items, everything in the general plan update will come before the Planning Commission, the development code as well. All of those things that are associated with those projects will be the ultimate decision-making. The City Council will be the ultimate decision-making body, but it's built into our code that the Planning Commission sees each of those pieces as it comes forward. So you'll be very, very involved.
So. Excellent. Thank you so much. I just wanted to kind of know what was coming down our pipeline a little bit. I guess it's in the next 2 to 3 years, but it's good to know that we have that coming. And then just to kind of reiterate on something that Commissioner Buchanan said, I did notice that some of the things in there, you know, that there was, I assumed it was staff time, you know, that was the reasons, but especially the A3-1 and A3-2, I noticed that some of them said, like, we'll look at this during the general plan. Is there any way we can mark those two that they're going to be looked at during the general plan as well? Because they just kind of say no progress on implementing this program. And I think there was other ones that said, like, this task will be combined with a comprehensive general plan update. You know, if that could maybe be added into that progress bar, is that possible?
Yeah, I think so. I think we can take a look at those, kind of all the boxes, and see if we do some massaging of the language to make sure.
Excellent. Those were my only questions. Did you come up with anything else that you needed?
No, you and Kevin got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
The teamwork, I love that. All right. I think I should be taking public comment right now. If any members of the public have any comments on this staff report, so if they have comments for staff, please let us know now by raising your hand. We don't have anyone in the room.
There are no public in attendance on Zoom.
Thank you. All right. Well, with that, anything further from any of the commissioners at this point in time?
Just a general question. So you file these every year. Do you ever get any feedback from the state coming back to you one way or another? Or just, nope, we got your report. Thanks.
Yeah, in the 4 years that I've been submitting, there hasn't been any feedback.
Okay.
Just thank you for the submittal, and see you next year.
So I think I will make a motion, and I might get this wrong, for the Planning Commission to receive and file this report with the correction of the table on page 38, just to double check that those numbers are correctly filled in, and then just some of the details that we suggested be added to the report. Do I have a second? Thank you. Do I have any discussion?
I can't help myself. This is a free license to speak. I just hope that staff will relay to the City Council that our concerns were probably similar to yours. When you look at the numbers, that the very low income are where we're most negligent. And negligence is not the right word. We're most deficient, I'll say. Negligence is not the right word, because we've been paying attention, as we discussed. It's just very difficult to get that machine up and running, and so we got to do what we can. So I hope you'll convey that shared expression we had of, we got to do something. I don't know what something is. I know you've got a lot of ideas. There are programs in place, so I just hope that message will go along with our filing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the staff report to the City Council will summarize our meeting and our discussion here today, and we'll be sure to hammer home those points you just reiterated.
Thank you.
I don't think I have to change my motion with that, right? Okay. Can I have a roll call vote, please?
Vice Chair Maravilla?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Yes.
Commissioner Berlin?
Yes.
Commissioner Roof?
Yes.
And Commissioner Sackerson?
Yes.
All right. Where are we? Okay, sorry. Notice of administrative items since date. We don't have any, which that's, I never see that empty, so that's kind of fun. is there any, we'll move on to the next item. So commission communications, do we have any communications between the commissioners? I just wanted to thank the city for letting us know about the commissioner training, the planning commissioner training from the, I think it was offered by the state. I actually don't know who was offering that, but several of our commissioners attended the meeting and it was very interesting and, I mean, a great environment to learn. I think we also got some resources. I know I spoke with the person from HCD myself and, you know, asked, hey, come back and tell us how to do things, especially when it comes to affordable housing. So I think there's some opportunities that could come from that. So thank you for letting us know that that was occurring. Do we have any staff communications?
No, none. Did I mention we're having a general plan update? That's it.
That's your whole life right now. Yep. Thank you. All right. Well, with that, I think at 6:56 p.m. we will adjourn. Thank you.